We're continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 14, and we're reaching an end to this very wonderful pastime with Brahma visiting Vrindavan, seeing the pastime of Krishna killing Agasura and a whole series of events that follow that and some prayers. So where we are now, he's finished his prayers and he's just now getting ready to return to Brahmaloka. Throughout his prayers, Krishna's been silent, and Brahma's not really sure how to take that, how to understand what that silence means. It can mean disapproval, it can mean different things, but he's at least requesting a glance from Krishna so that he can get confirmation that he can now return to Brahmaloka, having been taught something very wonderful by Krishna. The concluding message, O Swayam Bhagavan, as long as this universe exists, I offer my obeisances unto you. So now Shukadeva Goswami continues narrating Tamaraj Priksha, text 41. Having thus offered his prayers, Brahma circumambulated his worshipable Lord, the unlimited personality of Godhead, three times, and then bowed down at his lotus feet, the appointed creator of the universe, then returned to his own residence. And the purport, although Lord Brahma had prayed to take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan, or even in the area surrounding Vrindavan, Lord Krishna, by his silence, responded to Brahma's prayers, indicating that Brahma should return to his abode. First, Brahma had to complete his personal devotional service of universal creation. Then he could come to Vrindavan and get the mercy of the inhabitants there. In other words, a devotee should always be attentive to executing his personal devotional service properly. This is more important than trying to live in the Lord's abode. That's like the, you know, the ISKCON commentary version. And here's Vishwanath's. What was desired by Brahma? Abhishta. Actually, he desired to attain Krishna in Vrindavan. However, he desired to be sent by the Lord to Brahmaloka, his own abode, because in his responsibility as the creator of the universe, if he gave up his post, the universe would not work properly. According to the reasoning of Brahma Sutra, so there's a reference to Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra, the devatas remain in this world until the end of their tenure. And that's referenced a few verses earlier, 3:14:33. Thus, after fulfilling his responsibilities in the post of Brahma, Brahma would attain the desired goal of residence in Vrindavan. Duty first, right? Jiva Goswami writes in his commentary in verse 41, Brahma praised in many ways the Lord who cannot be circumscribed or encompassed. He praised with devotion the Lord who pervades everywhere, Circumambulating Krishna three times, he departed for his abode, which was the desire of Krishna, who was silent when Brahma requested to be near Krishna. Since Brahma was the creator of the universe, creation could not continue in the universe without him. It should be understood that at the end, his desire was fulfilled according to the principle of, again, here's the Brahma Sutra reference, the rulers of the universe remain in the universe until the end of their designed, designated period. So, it is said that Vedanta Sutra is a summary of all of the Vedas, and the Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, right? I'm looking at our hostesses. You with me? Vedanta Sutra is a summary of all the Vedas, and the Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So in Vedanta Sutra, it says a certain statement, and the Bhagavatam is making the same statement, but explaining it. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So that's what's being said here. He, Brahma, has a post in the universe, and it's a very important one, and he's not to, like, check out of his post and go do what he wants to do. He is to fulfill his post till the tenure, until the prescribed period is finished. And for him, the prescribed period is the duration of the universe. He creates it and he lives until the end of the universe. And then something else might happen, like his realization of, let's go back. The realization specific here in this section is the unique position of Krishna as the source of everything. But didn't Brahma understand this even before creation? The answer is yes. Brahma understood all this. We know that from Brahma Samhita, right? Before there was a universe, before he did the creation, he did certain things and he became realized. And then when he became realized, he spoke the prayers of Govindam Adipurusham Tambaham Bhajami. Krishna is the source of everything. And it's very clear in those verses and in some categories of detail at least, but Krishna is the source of everything. Like, one of his prayers in this chapter 14, he speaks of specifically, he addresses Krishna as being the source of the guna avatars, includes himself because he's one of the guna avatars, and the lila avatars, he's the source of the lila avatars. But for that matter, he's the source of all avatars, he's avatari. He is that one form of Krishna is the source of all of the other forms of the Lord who appeared in the universe, and he's the source of universes. But that was expressed in Brahma Samhita. Ramadi murti shakala neyame natishtan. Ramadi, beginning with Rama, etc. Murti shakala. So there's so many forms of the Lord that appear in this world, and Krishna is the source of them all. Brahma already understood that. Now he's reiterating that. But so when the universes are created, which is also described in Brahma Samhita, and it's also described in the Brahma Sutra and elsewhere in the Rig Veda portion of the Vedas. So here's expanding some details. Because Brahma is the creator. And so he knows all about the creation because that was his service. So he's returning, although he wants to be with Krishna, there in his eternal abode of Vrindavan. But he's going to have to wait. So Krishna wants him to return because there's some service waiting for him. Now, there's an interesting point. Both of these commentaries speak, if he gave up his post, the universe would not work properly. So the creator of the universe, there's a maintainer of the universe and destroyer of the universe, but that doesn't mean it's, it's like the theologians of Europe that I learned from what was going on in the scientific world. It happens that theology gets shaped by current events. So there was a time in current events when there was development of machines, and in Germany and Switzerland in particular, there was a lot of skill being invested in building watches and clocks. Like every time we come to by your place, there's a Chicago clock store. So, and I think of this every time I pass by there. So, there was a theology that evolved that said God is like a big watchmaker or clockmaker. He builds it, he sells it, and then he doesn't have any further interaction with it. There's a theology that says that God creates and has no further interaction with it. And people make a mess, and that's why there's suffering in this world, but it was a way of distancing God from the suffering of this world. People just made a mess of what was given to them, the watch or the clock, the machine. The purpose was to give an explanation of God's involvement with creation like the watchmaker. Isn't he not responsible how people use the watch? He just makes a good watch. So the creation was a good creation. People made a mess of it, and so they suffered. So there is another theology that says there's an ongoing involvement. With Vishnu, who is the source of everything, and the creation. He's not involved in it, but he's not, it doesn't exist without him. It doesn't exist apart from him. That's a different theology or conception of God and who we are and what this world is. Now we're coming to Brahma again. He's not the original creator. He's the secondary creator. Secondary creator means, according to the language of the Bhagavatam, there's the primary creation and there's a secondary creation. That's our English translation of there's what Lord Vishnu does and what Brahma does. Sarga is what Vishnu does, and Visarga is what Brahma does. Sarga and Visarga. Those are two of the 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. And so Brahma's creation isn't just like he builds the watch and walks away. There's some ongoing responsibility, like when the demigods have a problem. Every now and then demigods have a problem and they go to Brahma, help, we got a problem. Like when, for example, when Hiranyaksha did what he did to cause the earth to fall out of its orbit, the demigods went to Brahma and said, help. The earth planet just fell out. You know, they're not like, oh, well, what's one planet out of so many planets? They were concerned. Someone's at your door. So they went to Brahma, and Brahma was pondering over what to do. Then you know what happened?
I can't remember.
From his nostril came the size of a thumb, a little boar. Remember?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then the boar got bigger and bigger and bigger. But that was Brahma. No, it was Vishnu that appeared. My point is, he has an ongoing responsibility with the universe. It's not like the watchmaker just makes the watch, it goes into the shop, people buy the watch, and it's over. There's some ongoing responsibility he has. There's other ongoing responsibilities that he has. And here's another one. We learned this, we discussed it in Brahma's Prayers. Verse 33 from this chapter, you can go back and look at it later. Brahma speaks of himself as one of 11 presiding deities of the senses. There's senses, but senses don't work without presiding deities. And the presiding deities can't make the senses work without Supersoul. So he, Brahma, is one of 11 presiding deities of the senses. And he presides over intelligence. And without going through the whole long list, he has an ongoing function with the universe. So if he checked out, like, I want to be with Krishna, I'm out of here, then the universe wouldn't function properly. People wouldn't be able to be intelligent. I mean, they couldn't exercise their intelligence without the predominating deity overseeing it. And so he is the creator, but there's an ongoing creation responsibility with the being the creator. Besides, it has to happen every day. There's this sub-creation, partial creation, every day. Somebody's got to do that. That's part of the cycle of things. Because he has his night, and during his night, there's a partial devastation. And then it becomes morning, Brahma's morning, and Brahma has to recreate that which was dissolved, the lower planetary systems. So twice there's this connection between what's said in Vedanta Sutra, that is, the devatas remain in this world until the end of their tenure, spoken of in the Bhagavatam, but also spoken of in Vedanta Sutra. Now, amongst the devatas, there's only one, and that's Brahma, that his tenure is the duration of the universe. All of the other demigods, they're appointed posts, and every time there's a change of Manu, there's 14 changes of Manu during every day of Brahma, there's a whole new set of persons occupying that post. The post of Indra, the post of this one, that one. Yes, his department heads. Each Manu. And so they appoint somebody. Empower them. Here's Sanatana Goswami's commentary. Brahma praised in many ways the Lord who cannot be encompassed. There's no limit to him. You can't circumscribe him is another neat word. Nice word. He can't be contained or limited or encompassed. Circumambulating Krishna three times, Brahma departed for his abode, his house in Brahmaloka, which he desired. First, he decided in his mind that he would stay somewhere invisibly, giving up his position as Brahma out of greed for living in Braja or out of shame. So he stood there. Receiving at that time the mercy of the Lord, he went to his dear home because he was the maintainer of the universe. If he gave up his post, the creation of the universe would not take place properly. Thus the Lord sent him home. And then finally, here's Jiva Goswami's commentary from Kramasamdarbha. Shukadeva Goswami says, Quote, having thus offered his prayers to the unlimited Lord, Brahma circumambulated him three times and then bowed down at his lotus feet. The appointed creator of the universe then accomplished a desire, namely the Lord. He accomplished his desire, or Swadhamma, which was always hinted by Krishna, who was silent when Brahma requested to be near Krishna. So that's the end of the commentary for this particular verse. The next one's a little complicated. Let's see. I'll discuss it. Would you want to hear some complicated description? We touched on this a while ago. Okay, so here's the question. What did Krishna do after Brahma left? Why? One of the reasons it said that Krishna was silent is he wasn't so, I mean, Brahma's prayers are nice and all that, but his heart was really attracted to being with the cowherd boys. So hurry up and finish because I want to get back and have lunch with the cowherd boys. That's his heart's attraction. So the question is, which cowherd boys? Because there were two sets. Right? The ones that Brahma put in the cave, and the ones that Krishna manifested that were actually Krishna, looking like the cowherd boys. Identical. So much so the mothers couldn't even figure it out. This isn't my son. What mother doesn't know who their son is and who isn't their son, even if they look something like their son? But anyway, perfect replicas. So when Krishna went back to be with the cowherd boys and calves, which cowherd boys and which calves? Because we heard Brahma put the calves in the cave, but we don't hear about them leaving the cave. So are they still in the cave? And he's just having lunch with the other set? But they're still in the cave. So what happened? This commentary explains what happened. And it's a little complicated. And some of the commentary explains it a little differently. So be ready to hear things that aren't a one-to-one correlation between one commentary and the next commentary. Fasten your seatbelt. It's a little different. So this is text 42. After granting his son Brahma permission to leave, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took the calves, who were still where they had been a year earlier, and brought them to the riverbank, where he had been taking his meal, where his cowherd boyfriends remained, just as before. So let's go back to chapter 13. The trick that Brahma played was, as the calves were grazing, eating grass while the boys were having lunch, they started wandering here and there. The boys looked around and said, hey, the calves seem to have gone some other place. Let's go. We have to go get them. And Krishna said, no. You finish your lunch. I'll retrieve them. And that was part of the plan. So while Krishna's gone, Brahma had kidnapped the calves, put them in the cave. Krishna's looking for the calves. And then Brahma came back and kidnapped the boys and put them in the cave in sequence like that. So both the calves and the cowherd boys are in a cave. That's chapter 13. Now we're hearing Krishna had gone to find the calves, and he found the calves and brought them back to where the cowherd boys, and there were the cowherd boys. So what about the ones in the cave? I mean, it's the same question Brahma had. How's there two sets? So which of the two sets is it? That's the question. This is the BBT commentary or purport. The word svabhuvam, or his to his own son, indicates that Lord Krishna forgave the offense that Brahma had committed and treated him with affection as his son. It is stated in this verse that, get ready, the original cowherd boyfriends and calves were situated just as before, colon, near the bank of the river Jamuna and in the forest respectively. Previously, the calves had disappeared within the forest, and Krishna had gone to search for them. Not finding them, the Lord had returned to the riverbank to discuss the situation with his cowherd boyfriends, but they had also disappeared. That's chapter 13. Now, the cows were once again in the forest, and the boyfriends once again on the bank of the river, ready to take their lunch. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, the calves and boys remained in the forest and on the riverbank respectively for one full year. Lord Brahma did not actually take them away to another place. Wait a minute. By the Lord's omnipotent illusory energy, comma, the gopis, that's the mothers of the boys, and other residents of Vrindavan did not notice the calves and boys, nor did the calves and boys notice the passing of a year's time, or feel any hunger, cold, or thirst. All this was part of the pastime arranged by the Lord's illusory potency. So meanwhile, the Krishna expansion boys and calves went back home and did what they did. And the original calves and boys were in the forest and by the riverbank of the Jamuna for 1 year. Puzzling, huh? All this was part of the pastime arranged by the Lord's illusory potency. Lord Brahma thought, I have kept all the boys and calves of Gokula sleeping on the bed of my mystic potency, and to this very day they have not risen. A similar number of boys and calves have been playing with Krishna for one whole year. Yet they are different from the ones illusioned by my mystic potency. Who are they? Where did they come from? Paragraph. Nothing is invisible to the Supreme Lord. Thus Lord Krishna appeared to be searching for the calves and boys, only to enact the dramatic pastime of bewildering Lord Brahma. After Brahma surrendered and offered prayers, Lord Krishna returned to the original boys and calves, who appeared exactly as before, although their size had somewhat increased because of 1 year's growth. Pretty cool, huh? Final paragraph. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, since Lord Krishna was playing exactly like an innocent young cowherd boy in Vrindavan, after four-headed Brahma offered his prayers, the Lord maintained his role as a young cowherd boy and thus remained silent before Brahma. Krishna's silence indicates the following thoughts, quote, where did this four-headed Brahma come from? What is he doing? What are these words he keeps on speaking? I'm busy looking for my calves. I'm just a coward boy and I don't understand all this. Lord Brahma had considered Lord Krishna an ordinary coward boy and had treated him as such. After accepting Brahma's prayers, Krishna continued to play as a coward boy and thus did not answer the four-headed Brahma. Rather, Krishna was more interested in rejoining his cowherd boyfriends for the picnic lunch on the bank of the Yamuna River. Pretty amazing, huh? Commentary is equally amazing. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Krishna gave permission for Brahma to leave by his silence, for it is said silence means consent. There's a Sanskrit phrase, silence means consent. That's a common understanding in the world. Brahma had asked permission to go. That was two verses ago, verse 39. Seeing the Lord's silence, Brahma took that as his permission. Krishna could not break his silence because he had to perfectly play the part of the young boy, the son of the king of Braja, in the pastime of the bewilderment of Brahma. Krishna continued his act of looking for the calves and boys, as described in chapter 13, text 16. When Brahma began his prayers in this chapter, Krishna, as a young gopa anxious to find the calves, could not understand where Brahma had come from, what he was doing, what he was saying. By remaining silent, Krishna completed his act as a cowherd boy. He played the role of being ignorant of his own powers in front of Brahma, who is dependent on him, and thus the word natya, or actor, is used. However, paragraph, in front of Yashoda and other devotees in intimate relationships, the ignorance that he shows for his powers, that is, covered by the mahaprema of the inhabitants of Braja, is not a pretense and is not described as natya. What's being said here is Krishna had a relationship with the Brajvasis different than his relationship with Brahma. The Brajvasi relationship is filled with prema. Mahaprema, or Braja prema, or Madhurya prema, very, very intimate and confidential. And so Krishna wasn't just acting with them. Queen Kunti says that in her prayers. That is, she, in her famous prayers, one of her prayers says, I can't understand the love of Mother Jasoda, because Krishna was afraid of the little stick that she was holding in her hand, and he was crying. Now, if he was just play acting, that's easy. Oh, she thinks she's my elder. She's got a stick, so I'm supposed to cry now, and he cries. He's just an actor. But no. With Mother Jasoda, it wasn't acting. It was his feeling connected totally with her absolute love, as the intimate Mother Jasoda loves Krishna. Unlike this, it wasn't an action. So he was acting with Brahma in a certain way, but it's not like that with the residents of Vrindavan. It's unique. That's what is being explained by Jiva Goswami here. That ignorance is real. You know, it's real meaning it's of the internal potency. Krishna brought the calves, absorbed in eating grass, back to the same place on the bank of the river. That place was the same as before, with the cowherd boys sitting in the same positions, waiting for lunch for 1 year. In that place were the same original cowherd boys, different from the expansion cowherd boys who performed Leela for 1 year with the Lord. Fascinating, huh? Now here's, that was Vishwanath. Now we're reading Jiva Goswami's commentary. Krishna gave permission to Brahma, his son. The phrase indicates that he forgave Brahma for his offenses just as the father forgives the son. Krishna gave his permission, asking with a smile, "Are you going soon?" This indicated Krishna's humility, his mercy, forgiveness, teaching, joking, and scolding with a hint of his omniscience. I will not be happy with these forms of boys and calves that you put to sleep. I will gain happiness from these boys and calves in a waking state. unquote. Paragraph. After giving Brahma permission, he brought the calves, the same, now as in their previous state, to the bank of the Jamuna, where the boys were sitting, eating lunch as previously. The boys looked at him with yogurt rice in his hand as previously. The power of his Maya, acting by his will reconcile all things. Though the mothers remembered the activities of the boys who were actually Krishna's expansion from the previous day, it was not desirable that they should remember incidents which occurred during the previous year. I mean, everybody just forgot everything they're supposed to forget. A whole year had passed, and they didn't like, you remember, they've been a whole year. So, you know, if the mothers had said, hey, do you, what, you know, 2 weeks ago, we did this together. Do you remember? And they're going to go, huh? It's just like, that didn't happen. And how it didn't happen by Krishna's arrangement, because here it's this inexplicable, the very same thing that Brahma saw in chapter 13. The Lord has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. And so that means he can do all these things. And it sounds like, you know, hey, that's too clever just to say it's his mystic potency. He does whatever he wants with his mystic potency. You can, all contradictions get resolved because he has mystic potency. That's too clever. I want a rational explanation, please. You're not going to get one because he's working through his mystic potencies. So materialists and rationalists don't, you know, like, forget it. You people are silly. Though the mothers remembered the activities of the boys who were actually Krishna's expansion from the previous day, it was not desirable they should remember incidents which occurred during the previous year. And here is Sanatan Goswami. It's kind of lengthy. Brahma did not leave only by his will. Krishna gave permission to Brahma forgiving for his offenses. After that, Krishna brought the original calves to the bank where the boys had been eating, or where the calves had been. The calves had been in the forest or on the river bank at another place. Brahma brought the calves and boys back. This is a slightly different version. Or the Lord brought them back. It is clear that the boys remained in illusion at that place for 1 year, for it is said that Krishna brought only the calves back. He had previously gone to get the calves to pacify the anxious boys. It does not say that they came from somewhere and again sat there. With the disappearance of Maya, they were sitting on the bank for eating their meal. Paragraph. But this was not visible. Why could other cowherds not see them there? Did they not suffer from cold, wind during that time? Was it because of powerful illusion? Though the Lord saw this condition of the boys, why was he indifferent? Did Brahma take the boys to Brahmaloka, to a place that the Lord could not see, and keep them there, bewildered by illusion? This is not proper. Then he goes back. But it's said in the 13th chapter, text 41, that they were on the bed of Maya. By the mercy of the Lord, they did not suffer. wherever they were taken, they were not invisible to the Lord who has condensed knowledge. When Krishna previously did not see them and began searching for them, that was a show of extreme affection in order to fool Brahma. That was previously stated. Thus the boys were situated at that place. In other words, Krishna had to go look for, but he already knows where they are. Doesn't have to go look. Like, you know, Ram looking for Sita. Well, he's omniscient. He knows where Sita is. But he's going through this pastime of, oh, where has Sita gone? And all that. Which way did Ravana take her? He's omniscient. It's a pastime as if he's not. For many other purposes of exchanges with his devotees and so forth. The purposes of his appearance. That's Ram. And Krishna also. You know, search for the calves. He doesn't have to go search for the calves. And then the cowherd boys are going, oh, where's the cowherd boys? Sridhar Swami says, Sridhar Swami is the commentator who lived before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu acknowledged that he is the authority on Srimad Bhagavatam. So his commentary says, how could they remain sitting there for such a long time? Did they forget about eating and drinking? The boys were situated as previously. The boys, the calves, the bank, the food, and the seats were there as previously. But after 1 year, they would have grown in form. By the power of the Lord, the boys' behavior and appearance over the year manifested to the mothers and others by himself. So Krishna had manifested as the boys and calves. Otherwise, there would be some difference between the boys of the previous year and now. Almost done, if you're not thoroughly bewildered. Jiva Goswami is very similar to what was written earlier, in short. After granting his son Brahma permission to leave, the Lord took the previous calves and brought them to the riverbank where he had been taking his meal and where previous cowherd boyfriends remained, just as before. Quote, Krishna, I will not be happy with these forms of boys and calves that you put to sleep. After giving Brahma permission, he brought the calves. The same now as in their previous state to the bank of the Jamuna, where the boys were eating lunch as previously. So there's slightly different things being said by our different acharyas. And, you know, don't ask me to sort it out. The one of the main things out of all of this is Krishna has inconceivable potencies and he does different things in different ways at different times according to his desire for the pleasure of the mothers and for pleasure of the cows so they would have Krishna as their calf. The bull so that Krishna would be their son. The parental affection of the calves and bulls, or the cows and bulls. Krishna was fulfilling their desire. He was arranging so that on the one hand, Brahma could see, in fact, the unlimitedness of his unlimited and inconceivable potencies. Brahma could then be checked in any speculative tendency because there's several places in his prayers Brahma teaches something that's very important for us, that is by the power of speculation, we won't be able to understand Krishna. What are the celebrated verses? Gyane paryasa udapasyana manta eva. We've been referring to that over and over again. It's verse number 3 of chapter 14. Very important verse. What Lord Chaitanya confirmed, this is the essence of the goal of life and how to achieve it in his talks with Ramananda Roy. So very important. So he is just now reiterating one of the fundamental teachings of bhakti. One of the fundamental teachings of bhakti is that it's devoid of fruitive intention and speculative tendency. You know the verse from Rupa Goswami. Anyabhilashatushunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam. Jnana karma dhyanavritam. Bhakti is without speculation and without fruitive intention in your work, in your life. Jnana and karma. Krishna can't be known. The highest truth cannot be known by power of speculation. Not accessible that way. So it's being confirmed by Brahma in his prayers, so he had the direct experience, and he's just repeating it again, because it's good for us to hear things repeatedly so we can understand them nicely. And so many purposes without listing them all. Krishna is fulfilling many, many purposes. So part of the purpose in bewildering the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Moha means illusion and Vimoha means big illusion. Brahma was bewildered by what he saw. And so part of the commentary is saying Krishna was upholding the bewilderment by, on the one hand, showing him his unlimited potency, but on the other hand, staying in the mood and the role of a cowherd boy. Like, who are you and what are you talking about? I gotta find the calves. Let me go. Find the calves and bring the calves back to the cowherd boy so there we can resume our lunch. He's in that mood. It's something quite similar, different but similar, to Krishna playing with the cowherd boys, and the cowherd boys tell Mother Yashoda he swallowed dirt, and Krishna said, they're lying. I didn't swallow dirt. And she said, okay, if you didn't swallow dirt, let me look inside your mouth. And she looked inside his mouth, and she saw what she saw. And then, but he's still in the mood of a little boy, playing with his friends. This event took place in Gokul, when he was still in the other side of the river Jamuna before he came back to Vrindavan. So he's very young. And this pastime is also when he's very young, because he's not yet taking care of the cows. He's just taking care of calves. He's very young. And he's this very young boy with yogurt and fruit in his hand, just looking at Krishna, Brahma, not saying anything. So there's his divinity and there's his simplicity or braja mood. Brahma is not the same. His love is not the same as Mother Yashoda. So when Mother Yashoda sees Krishna's opulence like that, she can't believe what she saw. I better go lie down. I better go see a doctor. I'm not feeling well. I'm seeing things. She can't believe it. But Brahma can understand it. So he's speaking to Krishna as if all of what he just saw is the omnipotence of Krishna. Mother Yashoda can't see the omnipotence of Krishna, although he shows it to her. This is part of this whole message that comes from verse 31 on. The residents of Vrindavan are in this unique position. Their love for Krishna is so strong They cannot see his divinity. We had several discussions on this topic. Sometimes, for the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna pulls back the curtain. We discuss some of those situations. Krishna pulls back the curtain. Like Mother Yashoda looking in Krishna's mouth, that's one. Sometimes Krishna does that with the elders. And we just mentioned them. When this was a pastime for Krishna to give his mercy to Varuna, and at when giving the mercy to Varuna, so Varuna's associates, they kidnapped Brahma when he was taking bath on the Dwadasi day that they thought was the wrong time, so they kidnapped him, took him to the abode of Varuna. Krishna was sent to go find Nanda. He found Nanda in the abode of Varuna. And Varuna got off his throne and started worshiping Krishna right in front of Nanda, who, when he went back, said, "Whoa, who is this boy?" He was worshipped by Varuna. So Varuna understands him differently than we understand him. Who is he? And then they started saying so many things. Well, whoever he may be, he's naughty and he steals butter and he cries and he does, you know, they just kind of like forgot all about what he saw. So then Krishna decided, he wanted to show them Vaikuntha. So he took them to a certain place, a certain lake by the side of the river, the same place where Krura saw the spiritual world. And he showed them the spiritual world. And then he closed the curtain. They forgot everything. They went back and they forgot everything. But he showed them. And then he closed the curtain. Because their love for him is so strong, they can't stay in that position of understanding who he is, his divinity. They can't. And he loves that mood more than he loves the mood of Brahma, which is why Brahma kept wonderful prayers, very celebrated prayers. Many of the verses that he spoke, they're some of the outstanding verses of the whole Bhagavatam. He's the original preceptor of the world. And the residents of Vrindavan are above him because of their love. So we're getting this nice, clear picture of the uniqueness of the residents of Vrindavan. And so when he does think with the residents of Vrindavan, he's using his mystic potencies in different ways. And we can't, you know, our rational processors can't understand them. Other than it's just Krishna's mystic potencies, his unlimited potencies. People do things and they don't remember doing things. They're seeing things, they understand things, then they don't understand things. And they're not worried about it. You know, we worry about it. Because they're moved by something else. They're not moved by ignorance, that kind of forgetfulness. They're moved by the internal potency. Very special people. Honored within the Bhagavatam, this section here. Okay, let's see if there's some discussion on this topic. You fixed the microphone. Did you get a new one? You fixed it. You just changed it. Okay. One of the benefits of having day off of work, right?
There was one extra in my home, so we used it.
Oh. Okay. Okay, so now discussion. Anyone who's in the room here would like to have some topic discussed a little bit? If not, we'll go right to the online ones. Okay.
Question from Sri Radhika Mataji. I have heard that to repent further, Lord Brahma went to Navadvipa to perform austerities and became Haridas Thakur. Since Lord Brahma is a jiva, was his post taken by someone else?
Well, no. And I say that firmly based upon a very nice understanding that's found in Brihat Bhagavatamrita and Srila Prabhupada's morning walk in Juhu. And I can give some detail, but the principle is these exalted personalities, to assist Krishna in Krishna's pastimes and his service, they can expand themselves. In a morning walk conversation in Juhu, Giriraj Maharaj was asking Prabhupada, Krishna's pastimes are eternal. That means he's having his birth pastime, and then the next universe he's having his birth pastime in the next universe. He's lifting Govardhan Hill, and then he's lifting Govardhan Hill. He's always lifting. He's always, his pastimes aren't time-bound. They're eternal. So Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita. So he's always speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Does that mean there's multiple Arjunas? And Prabhupada's answer is less explicit than it is in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, but for the purpose of, the essence is this, for the purpose of assisting Krishna in his pastimes, the devotees have the capacity, his intimate devotees, have the capacity to expand themselves. And Prabhupada's language in that morning walk conversation is different Arjunas. But another way is it's just expansions of Arjuna, Arjuna's expansion. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the context is Gopakumar sees Narada here, there, and elsewhere. And he sees the Kumaras here, there, and elsewhere. And he's like, what are you doing here? I thought you were over there in different, you know, parts of creation and the spiritual world. And Narada says to Gopakumar, I've already explained this to you, don't you remember? And then he says explicitly, persons like me and Uddhava here, he's here in Goloka, but he's also in the material world. And, you know, and so, but that's for the purpose of serving Krishna, by the Lord's inexplicable arrangement. We can be in multiple places, or our expansions, the exact language is important, but we can expand ourselves, or he expands us, or something like that. So that, you know, that's bewildering, because living entities are not created. We know this, that's fundamental, Bhagavad Gita. Living entities don't come into being, they never go out of being, they're eternal. So, how can a living entity, Krishna expanding, that's not a problem. Living entity expanding, huh? But for the purpose of Krishna's pleasure, they can have their expansions. In Prabhupada's statement in Juhu, they're different Arjunas, but it's not like a different jiva, different diva, different jivas. Arjuna's expansions. It's high technology, spiritual technology. It's not for, you know, for ordinary conversation. We don't ordinarily go into discussions like this with people who are still trying to understand they're not their body. But elevated souls, for a purpose of serving Krishna, can do things like that. No. besides being bewildered. Does that answer your question?
That's Sri Radhika Mahatma.
Oh, Sri Radhika, okay.
Yeah, I was thinking Guru Maharaj in Mahabharata, Yamaraj came as Vidura and also Yudhishthir. Two expansions.
Well, Yamaraj also came as the Yaksha that came out of the lake.
I have a question. Before my question, I was thinking, Guru Maharaj, our...
Did you say that Yudhishthir was... He was the son of, not he was. Yudhishthir was the son of.
He was son of.
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah, I was thinking he was Yamaraj and also Vidura was son of.
Son of.
Son of. I was thinking this before my question. I was thinking that our acharyas are giving so much explanation. Still, it is bewildering to understand the
questions. Yes.
I was thinking about Brahma's position. Nobody was giving him. So that was just a comment.
Okay.
in the purport of 41. It says, Krishna's silent response to Brahma's prayers indicated that Brahma should return to his own abode. First, Brahma had to complete his personal devotional service of universal creation. Then he could come to Vrindavan and get the mercy of the inhabitants there. So, Srila Prabhupada often says, you can go back home, back to Godhead. As devotees, what is our personal service that we have to finish to go to Vrindavan at the end of our lives, like Lord Brahma?
Well, it's different for each of us, isn't it? Our service.
Is it the service to our spiritual master?
Well, but there's a particular shape and form of that service that we do.
Can you explain?
Well, I'm a sannyasi. I don't have a wife and children. You have a wife and children. My service and yours are different.
That is varnashram
service. Yeah, that's service.
More
online. The other activity, the hearing and chanting and the spreading of Krishna consciousness and, those are also services. Teaching, caring, extending, etc. Making systems for devotee care and, all of what you do for the community. And so those are services. And you'll fulfill them. Not like, oh, this is a pain in the neck. I want to go to Krishna. It's part of our being with Krishna is the services that we do during our lifetime. Okay. Online.
This is from Srinath Prabhu. Lord Brahma of this universe is the pure devotee of the Lord. And he still accepts the responsibilities of the secondary creator of the material world. In this material world, he as well the devotees down in his disciplic succession has to see the sufferings of the conditioned soul. My question is, does Lord Brahma accept the role of secondary creator because of his material desire to be the controller of the universe or just purely as a service to Krishna? I have also heard not all universes have Brahma as a devotee.
Uh, I don't know where he's hearing from. And I don't know why he would put that at the end of this very complicated question. But Brahma is either a devotee or the Lord himself. It's such an important post. And there must be some desire for control. Otherwise, why would one become a Lord Brahma? One wouldn't become a Lord Brahma. If there's no desire for control, one would go to the spiritual world and do spiritual world things. Whatever one's relationship with Krishna is. Unless it's just Krishna assigns that service and that's fine with the person who becomes Lord Brahma because it's an assigned service. Which is certainly possible. But there's some desire for control otherwise there's some desire for control. With an enormous abundance of theistic merit, commonly or often, it is said the post of Brahma is awarded to someone who flawlessly executes varnashram duties for 100 lifetimes. That's pretty exceptional. So it's a most exalted person, and if that most exalted person has a desire to be a Lord Brahma, thus a controller, then he becomes Lord Brahma. But let's take some of the other exalted, let's say Maharaj Ambarish. Why didn't he just go to Vaikuntha? Because he was a Vaikuntha conscious person. He didn't have any material desire. But he's a king with opulence and ruling and this and that. Or Priyavrata. He was beyond any interest in anything material, and it took 3 of the 12 Mahajans to gang up on him and convince him to become a king. He didn't want to become a king, but a king was needed. And to be in that position of king, then his reservation was some attachment would come. The promise was given. You become attached, but you'll become free from that attachment. So become the king. So he agreed. And he became attached. And he became free from attachment. So. Whether it's, you know, simply because the Lord tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, I need a qualified Brahma. Can you do that qualified Brahma service, please? Whether it was that or, you know, if you so desire, I'm ready to be the Lord Brahma of this universe or one of the universes or whatever. So either way, it's the most qualified person who is Lord Brahma in each universe. And he's always a devotee. I don't know where he got that idea. Okay.
Question from Kirti Prabhu. Did the residents of Vraja forget their loving experience they had during the 1 year that the boys and cows were kidnapped? They must have remembered something that enhanced their love for Krishna. Could you please elaborate, Maharaj?
No. I mean, this is all very mysterious, but what we're hearing is they forgot. Just like Nanda Maharaj forgot what he saw in the river Jamuna when Krishna took them there and saw the spiritual world, saw Vaikuntha. He revealed the whole thing, and then they forgot. So their logic is they must remember something. So what, can you elaborate, please? By Krishna's potencies, they forgot. I can't say something more than that.
Another question from Sri Radhika Mataji. On the point that silence means consent, sometimes we remain silent.
Yes.
Because we do not have a relationship yes. wherein the person will be open to our suggestion.
Yes, and there's other reasons we may remain silent besides consent.
Is there a way to navigate this territory of not appearing like we are giving our consent, since we are only remaining silent because the situation is beyond our sphere of influence?
Well, there may be other reasons besides that one reason why you remain silent. It may not be timely. It's so many other reasons. And how do you navigate the territory? You use your intelligence. It's not appropriate for this reason, that reason, the other reason. So it's not a universal law. You have to use your intelligence when I should remain silent and when I should speak. When I should speak and how I should speak and to whom I should speak. And it requires intelligence. That's how you navigate.
Question from Kasturi Manjari Mataji. Lord Brahma is the presiding deity.
Could we turn the volume up a little bit? Just a little, not too much. Go ahead, speak.
Lord Brahma is the presiding deity of intelligence. Is it material intelligence?
Yes. Spiritual intelligence comes directly from Supersoul.
Another question from Kasturi Manjari Mataji. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 24th chapter, 35th shloka, it says that Pradyumna is presiding deity of intelligence. How to reconcile these two?
I'm not sure. My understand, the Sankhya system, this presiding deity of, is mentioned in this canto, Canto 10, Chapter 14. It's also mentioned in Canto 3, Chapter 26. That's the Sankhya section. Now, Pradyumna being the presiding deity of intelligence, it may mean, I'm not sure, it may mean that Brahma, to get the power to do what Brahma does, derives that power from Pradyumna. Presiding deities need to be invested with potency to preside. And Pradyumna is of the spiritual dimension. He presides over what Brahma does. Okay.
Question from Gayatri Mataji. Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu played some similar pastimes as that of Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna. I heard your Nityananda Trayodashi lecture. Namacharya Haridas Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did Brahma Vimohan Leela or any other Leela during their appearance in Kali Yuga. Did they do any such pastime in Kali Yuga?
Who's they again? Brahma?
This Haridas Thakur, who came as Brahma, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was there any leela between them?
Between who?
Between Haridas Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Brahma Vimohan leela, those kind of pastimes.
I don't understand the question. Do you understand the question?
So, Haridas Thakur is Lord Brahma, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. Was there any pastime Like this.
Like which?
Like the Brahma Vimohan Leela in Chaitanya, Chaitanya's pastimes. Lord Chaitanya.
I don't understand the question, and I don't think I, you know, I don't understand the question. We'll just have to leave it alone.
A question from Visalaksha Prabhu. Guru Maharaj, our modern education teaches a lot about speculations.
Yes, it does.
To understand things, even though still do not understand. What steps to take to stop the speculations in the bhakti process?
Well, follow the bhakti process differently than the speculative approach. I mean, what we've discussed this a few times during the course of, because this, it's one of the themes of Brahma's prayers, jnane prayasa udapasya, to abandon speculation, or Rupa Goswami's teaching, bhakti means to abandon speculation. So, but we're trained up to do speculation. So when we're engaging in the bhakti process, we have to be aware of that tendency. So one of the things that we discussed, to be inquisitive doesn't mean to speculate. To be inquisitive is, I want to know. And then we follow a different method in trying to know. We go to Guru Sadhu Shastra to know. That's how we come to know things. Authoritatively, that's how we come to know things. I mean, the classic example that Prabhupada would give, the little boy asks his father, what's that? And father says, it's watch. And the little boy doesn't know what a watch is, but the little boy says, it's a watch. So his knowledge is perfect. He doesn't have a full understanding of watches and watchness, but he just says, it's a watch. And so his knowledge is perfect, hearing from the authority, his father. So using that very simple comparison, to avoid speculation, but we want to know, we go to Guru Sadhu Shastra and we hear. Krishna is the source of everything. Now what are we going to understand about that? How can we even wrap our mind around there is a source of everything, and that source of everything is a person, and that person is the medium-sized Krishna who plays a flute. And how are we going to, like, get our mind around that one? By speculation. You can't. By speculation, you can't. But by authority, you can. You want to know, you go to the authority and you hear. Just like, you know, a very practical example. Before coronavirus, I had some flights that I purchased tickets for. Now, if I want to know if those flights are still going to happen or not, or, you know, 90% of them are canceled anyways, so they're not going to happen. But how do I know? You go to the authority. You go to the airlines and, you know, is this flight happening or not? No. Okay. And I know it's not happening. So what's the procedure for reimbursement or credit towards future flights? You know, it's from the authority, the airline. So we use that system all the time. So to avoid speculation, you ask the authority. You want to know? That's good. Go to the authority, Guru Sadhu Shastra. Then we can know. Now, to know doesn't mean I understand everything involved in the American Airlines decision of which flights they're going to keep, which they're going to cancel, and the whole shebang. I don't know all that stuff. I know they're losing a lot of money. Intuitively. Rough times for American Airlines and, you know, all the other ones. So, I may not understand everything about watchness. I may not understand everything about Krishna-ness, you know, that Krishna-tattva. But he's the source of everything. And I can gradually start to understand more, not by speculative method, but by descending knowledge and by the medium of bhakti. And then things become revealed. That's my faith. And this is my experience. Things become revealed through bhakti, through serving Krishna. I can understand things today that I didn't understand, you know, so many years ago when before I was engaged in bhakti. My experience of the world around me and experience of ultimate reality is a very, very different experience today than it was before. And it's not just, you know, I believe. It's a different paradigm, different experience.
A question from Chaitanya Rasaprabhu. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, what was the purpose of Krishna showing the spiritual world to Vrajavasis?
Krishna's desire. He was fulfilling a desire. They want to know about me. Okay, I'll show them. And then close the curtain. He didn't have to do that. He wanted to do that. They wanted to know about him. He wanted to reciprocate with them. He opened the curtain and closed the curtain. They forgot everything.
Question from Shari Mataji. When I was hearing about the person in the post of Brahma is so qualified, I remembered this verse from Canto 3, Chapter 12, 28 verse, where it says, Lord Brahma got attracted towards his daughter. So how to understand this?
I remember discussing this with her asking this question in St. Louis. And it was one of those back and forth, you know, yeah, but things. How do we understand it this way? Apichetu dharacharo bhajate mama nanyabak. Sadhureva samantavya. That's how we understand it. She can look up the verse. She knows the verse. So it's durachar. What he did was durachar. So how do we understand it? Sadhu. Not the behavior. The bad behavior was the sadhu's bad, proper behavior. But it's durachar. But we see him as sadhu. And we see it as like Prabhupada's explanation. I like the, he used the word tidal wave and now it's tsunami, but it's the same thing. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. And then something special happens and there's this tidal wave or tsunami that comes and completely covers everything, devastates everything. And then when the water recedes, it, the tide comes in, the tide comes out. That we regard Brahma as bhajate mama nanyabak. That's how we regard him. And the bad behavior is circumstantial. He's a jiva, he's not super soul.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, is she... Mother Yashoda, is she eternal mother of...
She is eternal mother, Yashoda is not a post.
Okay, and Mother Yashoda is always covered by yoga maya so that she don't understand...
Mother Yashoda is always Mother Yashoda, is always Mother Yashoda, is always Mother Yashoda. She's immersed in yoga maya potency.
Guru Maharaj, like, I'm not trying to compare, but I'm trying to understand here, like, we always talk about love between Krishna and Srimati Radharani and Gopis, but Yashoda Maya is not like worshipped, and so is there a difference between the like basically why Srimati Radharani is given that much importance, not equivalent to Mother Yashoda?
We are not giving equal time to Mother Yashoda. You're not saying that, but we're not, that's a comment, we're not egalitarians.
Yeah.
Okay, but Radha is his Ladini Shakti. There's Shaktiman and Shakti. That's not Mother Yashoda. It's Radha. And the gopis are her expansions. The sun and the sunshine. Shaktiman and Shakti. That's the Supreme Absolute Truth. Radha Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth. We say Krishna, but it implies Radha Krishna because Shaktiman implies Shakti. So special importance is given to the Absolute Truth. Mother Yashoda is one of his expansions, but Radharani is none different than him. She is his internal potency.
Okay. So, Maharaj, Yashoda Maya's expansion of eternal potency of Krishna?
Yoga Maya is Shakti Tattva. She's not a jiva. Mm-hmm. And she's the expansion of Krishna's mood of having a mother. She's motherness personified in the spiritual realm. But it's not like once upon a time Krishna thought, gee, I'd like to have a mother. And then, boop, there's Mother Yashoda. She's in that position eternally. But it's a rasa of paternal, maternal affection. And she's the embodiment of that.
And one follow-up question, Guru Maharaj. There are like Nitya Siddha and Sadhana Siddha. So Mother Yashoda is Nitya Siddha. She is always eternal associate of Lord Krishna.
She's not even Nitya Siddha because that's indicating the position of jivas. I mean, you could say Nitya Siddha because she's always perfect. But it commonly that terminology applies to jivas. There's these categories of jivas. Some are eternally perfect. Some are eternally conditioned. And some are become perfect by mercy, kripa siddha. So, but yes, what you're saying is correct. But commonly that terminology applies to jivas, not to Mother Yashoda, because she's not a jiva.
So, Guru Maharaj, any sadhana siddha devotee can attain the mood of Yashoda Ma, like if they practice.
They can assist her, but they can't become her.
They can. Okay.
You're asking the same question through the back door. They can't become her. They can be her assistant in her mood to assist her.
Yes, that's what my question.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, parental affection. There's. Yes. And being the assistant of her in parental affection, yes. The elder gopis are in that category. In the mood of parental affection towards Krishna, assisting Mother Yashoda in her primary role of the mother of Krishna. You have something? Okay.
At least four questions. This is from Amara Mataji. She has two questions. Krishna conveys multiple messages of humility, chastisement, etc. by just remaining silent.
Mm-hmm.
Did Brahma understand what is being conveyed to him?
Uh, our acharyas understood, then quite possibly Brahma understood. I mean, our acharyas are in one sense, they're in a higher level than Brahma. Because they're steeped in Braja Prem, following the residents of Braja. So, and Brahma is appreciating the residents of Braja and wishing to have their mercy. These acharyas have their mercy, and they're in that same mood as them. So to what extent Brahma understood everything, you know, I don't know. And I'd like to know why she's asking that question. Is it curiosity? I'll say it differently. Prabhupada would sometimes chastise and sometimes just to have the questions be relevant. Let the questions be specific to how this can benefit me in my spiritual progress, rather than just information, information, information. Sometimes I feel the questions are in that category.
So she mentions that it's the base for my second question. Okay, so it is connected.
Okay.
Now the second question is, many times due to dull intelligence...
Dull intelligence.
We may not understand spiritual authority's message. What is appropriate way to seek clarification?
You ask. That's all. Not in a challenging, but in an I wish to know submissive way. Now her question, the first part becomes more understandable why she's asking it. Go ahead.
Question from Atulya Mataji. Similar to Lord Krishna's pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan, is it that Lord Rama's pastimes are also going on eternally? And thus Lord Rama reveals to his devotees that he is the Supreme Lord, similar to Lord Krishna?
Yes, with the qualifier that goes like this. Killing Ravana does not take place in the spiritual world because there's no Ravana in the spiritual world. And that's a major part of Ramayana, Krishna's pastimes of, my understanding is as this, as follows. As with Krishna's pastimes, there's eternal pastimes and there's occasional pastimes. That's Bhaktisiddhanta's term, nimitta. That take place in this world that don't take place in the spiritual world. Like killing of demons. And like, you know, the actual birth pastime. There's no birth pastime of Krishna, although Mother Yashoda is clear, this is my son. And Nanda Maharaj is clear, this is my son. There's no birth pastime. So in Ramayana, that's, you know, the big section is the birth of Lord Ram. So the second part, so there's occasional, there's eternal pastimes. Second part is I'm much less familiar with commentary on Ramayana than I am commentary on Krishna Lila. So it's hard to answer that question for me because I'm not so familiar with commentators say, because that's how we know stuff. That all of this is beyond our, so we have to know through authority, Guru Sadhu Shastra. That's how we can know something. Even material, what to speak of otherworldly. And I'm not so familiar with the commentary of the Acharyas on the pastimes of Rama on earth and the pastimes of Rama in the Ayodhya and the spiritual world. Are they the same? In principle, there's eternal lila and there's occasional lila. And I can't say much more than that.
She had a follow-up question with that. Maharaj, are there any events where Lord Rama reveals his supremacy to his devotees?
Yeah. Well, there are two specific expressions in Valmiki Ramayana. One is when Parashuram speaks to Ram and he declares his divinity, but not everybody hears all of that. But he declares it in Valmiki Ramayana. Try to remember the other. It might be when Vishvamitra Muni comes to see that to request. I forget the other for sure, so I'm not going to say. There's another specific example where in Ramayana the divinity of Ram is revealed. Otherwise, he's not specifically revealing his divinity, but he's showing powers that are, you know, not worldly. But during the Ramayana period, there are many persons that had these super amazing mystic powers, and they weren't God. They had mystic powers like anything. So many had so many powers. So, not so explicitly. The short answer is, I'm unaware of anything that's so explicit like what Krishna showed to Mother Jasoda, or what Krishna showed to Brahma, or what Krishna showed to Arjuna. I'm unaware of Ram doing something similar in his pastimes. But I'm not so familiar. But I'm unaware of any.
There's two more questions. From Kirti Prabhu, Hare Krishna Maharaj. Do different Brahmas have different lifespans? Do all universes dissolve at the same time?
Yes. They're expanded at the same time, they're withdrawn at the same time. This is an interesting way to have this class and discussion, isn't it? Very different.
I found it. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. At the time of dissolution, Lord Brahma along with the inhabitants of Brahmaloka go directly to the spiritual world.
Not always.
My question is, how one goes to Brahmaloka as no one worships Brahma in this material world, but they do worship other demigods?
It's not that the only... One of the ways that you can go to a heavenly planet is by worshiping the presiding deity of that heavenly planet. But there is merit, like, for example, yogis may attain Brahmaloka. Long austerities, purifications, elevation of consciousness attain Brahmaloka. There's descriptions like that. Now, an exhaustive list of other possibilities, it's certainly not through worship of Brahma because there isn't worship of Brahma. But by merit and qualification, one may achieve that. One letter, I saw the reply that Prabhupada wrote to Rupanuga. Rupanuga was my temple president for some time in New York. And he had written to Prabhupada, what's the destination of a perfect Christian? Where do they go? And Prabhupada replied, I saw the letter, it's very rare to find a perfect Christian. And then he said, if there is a perfect Christian, may or will, I can't recall the verb, go to Brahmaloka, where there they can continue their practice of devotion and achieve spiritual perfection. Because he speaks of attain the kingdom of God. Excuse me, the kingdom of heaven. But it's not Satyaloka, anyway, this letter the Prabhupada wrote said Brahmaloka. Now I saw the letter and I haven't seen it in the letters book, but he was my president, so I saw the letter. You have something?
Maharaj, one
can you speak into the microphone, please?
Sure, Guru Maharaj. One tactical question, Guru Maharaj, for me actually. When like I chant, do Mangala Arati or go to temple or something, I'm able to think about Krishna or at least try to associate with Krishna in some means. But when it comes for other activities, like when I have to ready for my work or when I have to do my work, my complete focus goes on that. So at that moment, what is a practical instruction for me? Like how can I...
This is a big topic. I'm very familiar with this topic.
Okay.
And, you know, I can give you a short answer, medium answer, long answer, just refer you to the many times that I've given long answers. I mean, one of the classic ways of asking this is, I get it, except for 9 to 5. And when it be, you know, from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock, I just like, there's no Krishna. And then 5 o'clock, and there's Krishna again. Yes. So what to do about the 9 to 5 part? I get the morning program, rising early, chanting, reading, offering arati, and you know, then I get in the car and go off to work and sit in my workspace and it's, Krishna's gone. 9 to 5. So, there's multiple things. And it's already 17 minutes after 8. So I'm not going to give a long answer. Three simple things. One, practice detachment from the fruits of your work. Take a Bhagavad Gita message, work without attachment to the fruits of your work. And how do you do that? Well, you just understand, read it again and read it again and read it again and try to apply the principle and you'll start to understand what it means, how to do it, how to be Krishna conscious at work, give the fruits. There is a devotee that asked me the same question some years ago, you know, 40 years ago. And I said, the experience for you is going to be different than the next person. But if you apply yourself in principle, you're in the workplace, there's the person who thinks that they're your supervisor or boss or whatever, that one you're answerable to. But you know the one that you're answerable to is Krishna. So you just cultivate that consciousness and you'll get some realizations. 3 months later, they said lots of realizations. You know, so it made the difference was it wasn't just asking the question. They really applied themselves genuinely to thinking of Krishna as the person who they're accountable to. And they got some realizations. Now, you have to still function in the workplace where there is the supervisor or the boss and, you know, there's this thing that goes on in the worldly realm. And you do that. But you do that for Krishna. Not just for your backside or your paycheck or, you know, get your promotion or whatever it is that people are normally thinking about. act on the platform that my existence is for the pleasure of Krishna. He's the one I'm answerable to. I'm doing this for him. Now, you may not connect all the puzzle pieces right away, but it's a principle that if you act on the principle, you'll get realizations of how do you do it. And something that will help you to do it is good sadhana. Because with good sadhana, that becomes cheta dharpana marjanam. And you can bring that cleansed consciousness with you to the workplace. Here's two more. You're Krishna's instrument. That's your identity. And you're there, you are in the workplace. So you're Krishna's instrument in the workplace. Somehow, you don't, it's not clear to you at the moment. Somehow Krishna wants to use me as his instrument. So one of the ways I can be Krishna's instrument is exhibit the character of a devotee in the workplace. You show people, you don't have to give them a Bhagavad Gita class, you just show people through your life example. Here's the life of one who lives by the principles of Bhagavad Gita. And then they'll start to ask you questions about, you know, what's up with you. You're different than everybody. I mean, they may not ask it, but they'll see it. And they'll observe, and they'll understand by your behavior and your speech and your manners and your everything. And you're thinking, I'm Krishna's instrument. And somewhere in that workplace, there's somebody whose heart you can touch by your Krishna consciousness. You're carrying bhakti. And that bhakti is going to have its at least subliminal impact upon others in the workplace. And that's what my function is as the nimitta of Krishna. And it may not be so every day so clear how it's happening, but I know that it's happening because that's the consciousness I'm carrying. And Krishna will show me when he wants to show me, however he wants to show me, that here's the person who I want you to, you know, to touch the heart of. And he'll open the doors and then circling back around to the first, you know, the working without attachment to the fruits. That is, many people, the primary thing that they going to work for is the paycheck. They don't really like love what they're doing. They require maintenance. And the occupation is the means for that. So detachment from the fruits is when the paycheck comes, you know, it can literally or figuratively or, you know, devotionally, it goes to the lotus feet of Krishna. This is yours. And then it's spent accordingly. And when you pay the electric bill and you pay the phone bill and you pay the this and that, this is for your service. You expand in that consciousness. You can cultivate. My life in the workplace is in service to Krishna. The fruits of that work is in service to Krishna. And you live your life in that consciousness, in service to Krishna. Consciousness. You put the check in your bank account, but you know it's Krishna's bank account. And it's meant to be spent for Krishna. That's one way, just in terms of the fruits, that you can understand, I have to be thinking of Krishna in the workplace, because I'm working for him. It belongs to him. Like Prabhupada gives this example of an ambassador. He's representing a country, and somebody gives the ambassador a gift. It's not his. It belongs to the country. It's a gesture, it's a token on behalf of the representative of the country for the country. It's not the property of the representative. Or the bank teller example. So many people come and give the bank teller some money. It's not the bank teller's money, it's the bank's money. So the bank teller is working on behalf of the bank, and you're working on behalf of Krishna. Some stuff comes in your hand. It's not yours. It belongs to Krishna. And otherwise, the bank teller is a thief. And as with material law, so also. Karmic law says you think it's yours, you're bound. Your karma. And then how you use it. Thinking it's mine. But if you think it's Krishna's, the consciousness is different, and quite likely how you'll use it will be different. But even if it's the same, you go by the same, bananas, in material or spiritual consciousness, it's the same bananas. But the consciousness behind the act is different. To be a devotee, to be a representative of Krishna in the workplace or anywhere, you have to be thoughtful. Manishi nam is Prabhupada's phrase. You have to be thoughtful. And if you're not thoughtful, it's going to go right past you. You read Bhagavad Gita, you learn the verse, it goes in one ear and out the other ear, and it's just hollow inside. So that's not what a devotee is. So how do we practically apply what we read? And it's gradual, because we're used to, another paradigm. We're used to fruitive work. This earthly realm, so there's three realms, upper, middle, and lower. The middle region is fruitive. We're here because that's the type of place it is. And that's our nature. We're fruitive. There's hellish and there's heavenly. And we're in the fruitive. And we're used to thinking like that. So, how do you think otherwise? By cultivation of Krishna consciousness through sound. You hear and you apply. You live your life according to what you hear. That's what you carry inside now. Instead of, the fruitive. Right after you're not this body, then comes, how do you live your life that way? The first target is fruitive activity. I and mine. And it's, we're sitting here in your living room, right next to your altar here. It's easy to hear these things and go, yeah. And then it's a whole other thing when the next time you go and sit down in the workplace. Or, on Monday you're doing your online, whatever it is, work. To maintain that consciousness is different than having a discussion about it now, which is what you said. But it takes, so your good sadhana will lead to application. If you have heard well, you will apply it. And there's conditioning to overcome. The fruitive mentality conditioning. Like the speculative mentality and the fruitive mentality, those two have no place in bhakti. So it's in Prabhupada's language, it's a sort of cultivation. Okay. Now our hostess, do you have anything you want to add to this discussion? No, you're good.
I'm also good.
Okay. And our other guest here?
Yeah,
You're fine. Any topic you'd like to have discussed?
I have one question.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Like I have heard so many times that as a Gruhastha, we should balance our...
A little louder.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
To balance our...
We should balance our material life and spiritual life. How to understand it?
That's your question.
Yes.
I have a flash card for this one. And it starts with, here's the first one. I don't like this word balance. A better word is time management. Because balance is, there's my Krishna pocket and there's the me pocket. And how do I balance between me, and Krishna, Krishna? But our devotional picture is everything for Krishna. So it's not really balance material, spiritual. It's how do, that's, the starting point is misleading because everything is, in bhakti, everything is meant for Krishna. So how do I do time management? How do I manage how much time I spend chanting and reading and doing devotional things, worshiping and praying and, you know, the primary limbs of bhakti. And how much time management wise, how do I manage that time and the time that I require to do the things of that are not directly the 9 bhakti processes? It's time management. I'll just step back from that. One of the, have you heard the name Harvey Cox? Professor Harvey Cox was a Harvard Divinity School professor during the time that Srila Prabhupada was present. And he, although he was a Christian theologian at the Harvard Divinity School, he had a lot of interaction with devotees. And he liked the devotees. And one of the things he liked about the devotees is we're not secular. Secular is a term that's used in the American government as secular. There's division of church and state. That's a secular government. You familiar with that term? Yes? A little bit? Okay. When the Constitution of the United States was formed, the people that protested, the Protestants that came to America from England and other places, were really upset with the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church was mixing religion and government. The government was mixing with religion, religion was mixing with the government, and they were like arm in arm to control the people. And they didn't like it. So they became Protestants. So when they came to America, they formed a secular government, separation of church and state. So Harvey Cox wrote a book on secularism. He called it The Secular State. And I was in his home and he was explaining what the book was about. It was just after he had published it. And he said, in Christianity today, there's what we do for God and there's what we do for everything other. But that's not how Christianity started. It was one. Everything is for God. So that's why I don't like this word balance. Because it's like, it's time management. Okay? Sorry for that extra. So how do you manage your time? Well, what's important to you? And then you take a look at what's important to you. And then you set a schedule or blocks of time. That's my phrase. You know, you need to eat, you need to sleep. So how much time does it take to do those things? You have to keep your body clean, you keep your house clean, and how much does it take time to do those essentials? You know, but it's time management because that's meant for Krishna too. It's a little bit like this question over here about the workplace. That's meant for Krishna too. Secular is just not, it has nothing to do with God. It has everything to do with my family maintenance. But family maintenance is not, what, one of the things that Harvey Cox said, I really like the Bhagavad Gita, although he was a Christian theologian. I like Bhagavad Gita, I like the way that you lead your lives, because it's not secular. Everything is for Krishna. And that's how Christianity started, then it became secular. Separation. How do you balance between the separation thing? So, once you have what's important to you, then you have how much time do I need to do these things, and you make a schedule and you follow it. Time management schedule. And one of the keys about time management is, I mean, I'll just tell it this way. Here's this little boy who's like 5 years old, and I asked him, do you really well in school? He said, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to give you a quiz question. You ready? He said, yeah. So over here, imagine there's a glass jar. It's got a wide top glass jar. And over here is a big rock. And then over there, there's small rocks. And over there, there's some stones. And over there, are some pebbles. And there's some sand. And it all fits in the glass jar. Now, which one goes in first? He looked at his mother. He said, the big rock. That's time management. It'll all fit. Not like unlimited stuff, but it'll all fit. And how to make it all fit, you put the big rock in first. The big rock means what's most important, foundationally important of all things. Now, if you're not a devotee, you can have different answers to that question. But if you're a devotee, it's the core spiritual devotional practices, that's the big rock. And it goes in first. And then the other things. And it all fits. You put the sand in last, because the sand will, you know. So the smaller things are smaller things, but they're important. Although they're smaller, they're important. But you don't just, you know, ignore them. But you put the big ones in first. The big one in first. So that's time management. That's how you do the time management program, not the balance program. You have to assess each life is a little different. How much time do I need for this and that? And you're always looking, a devotee is always looking to not expand unnecessary things. That's simplicity. We always look to keep things simple. That's a mode of goodness principle, simplicity. But necessary is necessary. We keep things simple, but necessary is necessary. And then, so I don't have to spend so much time on the unnecessary because it's down to necessary. And I'm always looking to like, is it really necessary? And then, you know, I spend some time with that over there, whatever that is, because it's, you know, it's important. But I'm not going to neglect the big rock. So if you want some help with somebody, you know, to help you do the time management thing, go to somebody that you feel is really good with time management and take some guidance from them. Become, you know, learn from them how to do time management. And then, you know, another really good one is to be accountable. Because if you want to go from I'm not so good at time management to I'm getting better at time management, hold yourself accountable to somebody. Make a time management plan or schedule and then hold yourself accountable. And one last thing, I came across this recently. It was expressed very nicely. Don't allow yourself when you get, I know where it came from. Don't allow yourself to get so involved in something that it just takes more time than it should be taking, because you're really into it and you lose track of time, and then some other important things just don't happen. Don't let time just bleed excessively. So a really, really fantastic example of this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You can read about it without me going into it because of the time. It's already 9:15. 9:20. But he, you know, he kept a stopwatch, not a stopwatch, a pocket watch on a chain. And 5 minutes this and 7 minutes that, 15 minutes that. Because time is really important to manage properly. Time management is important. And he was a busy person, far more busy than you are, and far more busy than I am, far more busy than all of us put together. But he was really good at managing his time well. And busy people have to learn it. Because otherwise that gets crushed by obligations and the mind starts to spin. So I think I have to end because of time management. Okay. Prabhupada ki jai.